You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction.
It's the Rediscover the Road sales event. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app, your home smart speaker. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, Jonas Siegel from The Athletic. And Ray Ferraro coming up in just a moment, because we caught up with Joe Thornton in the 5 p.m. hour. You can find that podcasted online on tsn1050.ca or subscribe and check out every hour of every show on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you download your podcast. You can find Overdrive pretty much everywhere. And it was cool to catch up with Joe Thornton, and he mentioned that his dad was a diehard Leaf fan forever, and then obviously when Thornton was drafted by the Bruins, that had to change, and then when he went to San Jose, he became a Sharks fan, and now he gets to be a Leaf fan again, and hopefully he gets to be in the building, right? Like, that's the great uncertainty, yeah. Is when are the Leafs and the NHL actually going to return to play? And furthermore, when are fans going to be able to get back in the building?
If you guys had to guess, like, I've been all along pretty stubborn with the date January 15th. Do you think I'm off on that? Am I being too generous? Like, are you guys starting to doubt that maybe we're looking at February, or where are you guys at?
I'm thinking Feb 1 now, or that first week of February, like a Wednesday night, the first Wednesday of Feb.
What's the reason for that? Like, that's changed your thinking?
Me, personally? I just feel like there's a lot of smoke out there in the background about how they're going to make it work, the logistics. COVID numbers are up in Ontario and Quebec, and obviously they're still – you know, they're still pretty out of control in the States. So I think they're fine with pushing it back a little bit more, trying to work out the details of the scheduling. Maybe these divisional bubbles that we've heard so much about recently, like a Canadian division and the three others. And I think there is a hope and, quite frankly, a need for fans to be in the stands. They need to start making money off ticket sales. So I think it goes without saying, the more you delay, the more likely it becomes that at some point you can get fans in, not for opening night. But if you start in Feb as opposed to in January, maybe your playoffs begin in May as opposed to April, you know, or June instead of May. And then you just bought yourself an extra 2 or 3 weeks where maybe you can get fans in the stands and you can just make more money. Well, that's the only reasoning behind it.
I mean, was it 2012? Was that the 48-game season?
Yeah, 2012-13.
Yeah. I mean, for some reason, I don't know why, I keep thinking we're looking at something like that, maybe 48 to 60 games.
Well, didn't that lockout end in like mid-January too?
Yeah, I want to say January 11th or 18th, I can't remember. I just remember being a part of the glorious New York Islanders fisherman logo, and I don't think it
was back in the mid-90s, yeah. So they've been down that road twice, and this is, you know, different context, but potentially a similar timeline. Yep. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our TSN hockey analyst, Ray Ferraro. And, Ray, you would have been on those Islanders team with Noodles, right, back in 94, 95, I guess?
Yep. We had the one lockout ended, I want to say, early, even a little earlier, Noodles, January
8th?
5th, 6th, something like that, you know? And and then we had, I was back in B.C. My dad had actually just passed away, and we had to scramble and pack up and get back to New York because we started it. My recollection is we didn't have much time on.
No.
It was like a week training camp, wasn't it?
I think guys were coming in as fast as they could. And you know, the first day we had, I don't know, I'll just make this up, like we had a dozen guys, and then the next day we had 17. You know, like guys were coming in as fast as they can.
Yeah, I think there were still guys in Europe like that were like floating in there. There were a few guys that were eating the whole time, so they barely fit in their jerseys. Like it was it was an absolute gong show. I want to say the opening night, I do remember we lost. I think we lost like 5-2 or something.
That's a safe bet that year, Noodle.
It was a safe bet. But yeah, it was not good. We started very slow and it went south very quickly after that.
Well, this year it'll be different, right? There'll be a full training camp. Like, you know,
yeah.
It's not like they're going to catch guys off guard. They've got to negotiate when to
start.
They'll
catch a few guys off guard, Brian. They always do.
That's true. Even the summer, like a conventional season, guys get caught off guard. They're like, wow, it's Labor Day. Yeah. This is
now,
trouble.
One thing to keep in mind is, you know, and I don't know what we're assuming is going to go on or not go on, but the Olympics are supposed to start in July. And, you know, NBC needs all that airtime. So it's not like the... Yeah. You know, the finals are going to, at least from what I understand, the finals aren't going to be in, you know, August the 1st. Like, that's not happening.
There's
nowhere to put
point.
The games.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. And clearly the Olympics are going to win out over the Stanley Cup playoffs for NBC. And NBC will make that clear to the NHL. So that might dictate where, I guess, we can work backwards from. You know,
right.
Like I would think then that would suggest they want to finish the cup final by the end of June, early
well,
July.
Even, you know, Brian, yeah, I think even if it gets to the 10th, I want to say this year, the Olympics were like the 22nd of July or 25th of July or something mm-hmm. or other. So I'm assuming they just moved it forward, you know, kind of on the same timeline. But that's assuming that there even is an Olympics. Like, you know, far from being a... epidemiologist or however the hell you say it, you're going to bring people from all over the world and jam them in an Olympic village? Like, we got a long way to go before
yeah, that's
we get
not
to
a
that.
Lock yet. That is far from a lock that they're going and that they're going to be there and that everyone can qualify. There's still qualifiers that have to take place in order for people to get there. Like, the NBA has basically come out and said we're not going to be there because the NBA is not working on that timeline. They're going to be working on a different one. So maybe the NBA starts even later. I wouldn't be shocked if the NBA started in March, you know, and just keep pushing it back and they play all the way through September or whatever. And, you know, the NHL is on a different timeline, you would assume, because of what you just said. And I got to believe, like, if it were my league, it's easy for me to say it's not my money, it's not my
right.
business dealings. But I would want to be back on schedule next year. Like, I'm sensing from a lot of people that it's just weird that there's no hockey right now. In October, like the pandemic wiped this one out, and this one is totally understandable. But that means if you got to play 48 games instead of 65 next year, play 48, get it done a bit early, get back on sched, start next year in October, and Seattle will be in the league next year, right? By then, you got to believe hopefully vaccines and the pandemic is wiped out. Let's start next October as if we can forget about what happened in the past. That would be ideal.
Man, just think of the layers of complication and detail that have to be worked out to get the whole thing back on the rails again. Like, I can't even imagine how you go about planning it. It's one thing to say, oh, yeah, that's what I want to do. But then you've got to, you know, you've got to make it work somehow. I mean, it was
right.
not that it was easy this time, but they had the bubble set up and they, you know, they spent all their time figuring out how to make this bubble world work, and that's not what is going to happen this time. So, you know, how are you? Baseball somehow got through it. You know, like here they are at the World Series, and you know they had a pretty rough start. You know, I think it was the Cardinals at one point. They'd played like 8 games, and everyone else had played 20.
Right.
And you know they got wiped out, and then you know so like how are you flying teams around? The border's not open. You know, like, man, it's a lot of stuff to get it back on track, that's for sure.
Yeah, and there's excitement throughout the country, too, I think, with all of the additions that have been made, you know, for all 7 Canadian teams. That doesn't help either, that it's like, okay, it's October, we should be playing hockey, and I kind of want to see Markstrom play for the Flames tonight.
Right.
Or I'd like to see Nate Schmidt play or Joe Thornton. You know,
yeah, in an all-Canadian division, too.
To further that point, in an all-Canadian division. And I'm assuming that the work is done in the country. I mean, there's still some RFAs that I think have to work out deals on a bunch of teams, including here in Toronto. But for the most part, the work is done, right? Like the 7 Canadian teams, I think they're ready to play, and they've made their moves. And I think for the most part,
unless there's a trade, right? Unless there's a trade, really, is the only thing that can – I think, alter anything now. Like, who's got any room to be bringing in free agents?
Doesn't seem like anybody.
Sorry to interrupt, guys, but that's what I kept thinking about. Like, and Hayes, you alluded to this when we were talking about Joe Thornton and the signing of Joe Thornton, and there was no disrespect to Joe, but you know, I'm looking at Mike Hoffman not having a job. You know, I'm looking at some great players out there still that at the seventh hour might go, you know what, to hell with it. I'll take, you know, I'll sign for a bargain with Team X because that's all they got left on the cap, and I'll be a free agent next summer. And go at it again. Like you might be able to find, you know, a really good player for pennies on the dollar just based on, you know, cap space and the marketplace being completely bone dry.
Well, I'm assuming there's some GMs that are, you know, they're not quite capped out, but for all intents and purposes they are, and they're just sitting right there on the perch and. They're just going to wait and wait and wait and wait, and eventually somebody's going to spring loose because these guys are going to want to play, right? They want to play. They're still sitting there. There's nowhere to go. And I would assume, you know, it's not like opportunity is just going to pop up out of nowhere. The next window would be if teams, they got that second buyout window coming up. If a team buys out somebody to free up some space, that might be the next time we see any signings, really.
Well, and Ray, Kyle Dubas mentioned that the Leafs are probably done moving guys or signing guys. I was curious, like Joe Thornton obviously talked to us and he talked yesterday to the media that he came to Toronto to win a cup. How likely do you think it is for a team that's never won a round to just in 1 year go and win a cup? Like how I've been thinking about like Tampa and all these teams, like they go through these, they go two rounds and they go three. We're thinking of the Leafs just going all the way. Does that seem like unlikely?
Well, just on history, it does, right? Like it, all of a sudden you're gonna string together 16 wins.
Yeah,
like that's a long way to go. And it always seems like teams that win fall down before they win. I mean, maybe that's not the case. Maybe somebody can go through and. You know, and look at teams and go, oh, this team came from nowhere. But, you know, look at the last few years. Just in the last few years, teams have always fallen down somewhere before they won. And so that's a, man, there's lots sparkly about the Leafs to like. And, you know, I like the mix of their team better, I think, now. But, man, lots has to go right to win a couple of rounds. Like, I remember the year we went to the conference finals and we won one game. And when it was all over, everybody's, you know, congratulating us, what a great run and all that, which it was, but we barely got over halfway. Like, it's hard. It's a hard thing to go from nothing to champion. Well, seems like it's virtually impossible.
Yeah, right. I can't think of examples. Like maybe Carolina coming out of the lockout, but that was just the weirdest season maybe in NHL history, coming off a year where everything was wiped out. The rules were drastically different. There was a cap all of a sudden, and Carolina wins a cup. But
right.
I think, yeah, you're right. I mean, historically.
But that was 06, right, Brian?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's 14 years.
15 years, or 14 years, right?
It doesn't happen that way. Generally, it's either teams that have been there and done it already, Chicago, L.A., Pittsburgh, or teams that have been knocking on the door forever, Washington, St. Louis. You know, I mean, there are teams that have been on runs. Vegas went to a cup final their first year. They had never played a playoff game, and all of a sudden they're in a cup final, but they didn't win it. So, yeah, it is asking a lot, and it brings up a point and a question that I'm sure we're going to be debating for a long time between now and the beginning of the season is what are the expectations? Because it I think last year it was you got to win rounds.
A round.
Now, yeah, but that's it. But can it be a round anymore?
No.
Like, are we really going to play, hey, just get four and then get swept and that's a thumbs up? I don't think so.
No.
Like at some point it's almost you have to put yourself in a cup or bust mode, even though it may be completely unrealistic or just based on history, it shouldn't be applicable.
Well, I don't think the players should think of anything different, but I don't know that that's really the, you know, like what the barometer for it should be. Like if they win the first round and you play a hell of a series and lose in round two, like wouldn't that feel like progress? I mean, it would stink.
It quite literally would be. Yeah, literally would be. But it was supposed to be progress 2 years ago. It's almost like you're catching up
on
progress.
But we all know you can't go back and fix what's happened, right? We can't change. They can't change that. And the expectation of this team can't be to erase what happened 2 years ago.
They
can only be what they are now, no matter what everybody else thinks. They can only be what they are now.
I think, like, right now we can look at how teams look on paper, but until you actually see a season unfold or teams unfold in chemistry, like, we were talking about how that bottom six looks different for the Leafs, but who's going to be playing where? So, you know, if a guy like Joe Thornton looks like a 32-year-old Joe Thornton and is going to be playing in your third line, and it, now all of a sudden, like, I would reserve my judgment to see what the Leafs look like, you know, against other teams, against other, you know, competition. We had a tough time determining who the best team in Canada was the other day. It was a six-way tie.
Yeah.
Like, and that, you know, that's, so are we, are all six of those teams going cup or bust?
Well,
or
no, going... I mean, I was thinking that just as you brought that up because I was going to go there. Right. I think Montreal, if they get in, and if they get in, that should be considered a win. They haven't been in a couple of years, although this year I know technically they did, but that's not, they were nowhere close to it in a conventional year.
But how can you, let me jump in, Brian, how can you say they're not better?
Oh, they are better. They are better, yeah. But they made the playoffs, like legitimately made the playoffs in a few years. So I think if they make the playoffs, that should be a win. If they win a round, it's definitely a win. But I think Toronto, probably Winnipeg, Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver all have similar expectations that they have to win rounds, I think. And it's just not possible. I mean, the math alone would suggest the four Western Canadian teams can't do that. You know, they're not all going to win a round.
No.
So.
But that's, I guess that's my point. Until I see who they're playing against, how they look this season, if Frederik Andersen looks comfortable again, you know, Jonas, you were talking about whether, you know, maybe if Jack Campbell takes more minutes off Frederik Andersen than we expect, you know, that.
But
type
then
of
you
stuff.
Don't even know if Jack Campbell can, like, be that guy. Like, there's,
right.
I don't know. Like, Ray, when I'm looking at them, Anderson's probably right near the top of my questions. Like, what is he going to do? What about you?
We lost Ray.
Oh, okay. I thought he was just letting that. He was really going to soak that question in.
I thought he was thinking
there.
About it.
I'm like, I'm really anticipating what he's going to say here about Freddie Anderson. Yeah.
No, I just like that. I'm not trying to skirt the question. It's just if I'm trying to be objective and look at the Leafs team, yeah, they look better on paper, look more balanced. Montreal looks better on paper. You know, Winnipeg looks better on paper, adding Stastny back in. Calgary looks better on paper because they got the goaltender. You know, Edmonton had a couple nice pieces added to their team. Whether it works out or not, same thing. Tyson Barrie could look like the Toronto Tyson Barrie. He could look like the Colorado Tyson Barrie. Same thing with Kyle Turris. He could look like the Nashville Kyle Turris that got bought out, or he could look like the Ottawa. And the same thing in Vancouver. Nate Schmidt can make them forget about Chris Tanev. And maybe Braden Holtby makes them forget about Jacob Markstrom, but we don't know. There's too many question marks right through Canada.
Yeah, there certainly are. But every team also is just dealing with a different makeup, a different sense of urgency. Like in Edmonton, I would think they're thinking, we got to get going here. But they've got both those guys on deals for like six more years.
Yeah,
and they're
but you can't
20...
keep having that, Brian.
No, but like... my point is, though, if let's say they win a round or two, they can be like, all right, we build on that, and we got Ray Ferraro back. They build on that, and then next year we're really going to move through. The Leafs feel like there's more urgency here because Tavares is 30, and Freddie's got 1 year left, and Thornton's here
Riley.
Now for a year. And yeah, you know, so everyone's dealing with a different setup. And I think a different set of expectations doesn't mean they're going to meet them, you know, but that's
where
they're
at. Hey, guys, sorry I dropped out there. I don't know if you said this, but outside of Ottawa, is there any Canadian team that, like, about expectation that, like, the playoffs are absolutely the expectation for the other
sure.
six teams?
For sure.
And they can't all get in if there's a Canadian division, right?
Well,
six teams can't make it.
Yep. That's true. If they end up going with top four or whatever, then three of them,
like,
are going to miss.
Then you're going to, you know, people are going to be, you know, like, expectation failure will be, you know, will be at least half of those teams, it would seem like. The other thing is, like, you, when you bring the players in and, you know, you're in Toronto and Edmonton, there is similarity, of course, around Matthews and McDavid. And at a certain point, I think you get a little, you know, the management will get a little itchy in both places that, hey, we're melting away years of these guys' careers. I know they've got in Edmonton, they've got, I don't know, what, 6 years left on their contracts or whatever it is, but those years are melting away. And I'm sure, you know, McDavid and Draisaitl aren't saying, oh, that's okay, we'll be better in 3 years. Like, they, right. there's some internal urgency, expectation, hey, let's get going here, I think, for a lot of these teams. I mean, what has Matthews got left? 3 years?
He's got four, right? And so four, you take out next year, and suddenly you're looking at three, and you're like, oh.
That's what I'm saying, right? Comparing him to McDavid and Draisaitl. Exactly. It's they have – it's not that they don't want to win as much as anyone else. Of course they do. But let's say Edmonton makes it and wins a round and is out. You're still like, we got 5 years left of these guys, and they're 23. Like, 5 years locked in with the two best players in the country. You know, like, that's
– right.
It just feels like they would be in a different level of urgency. And they were kind of, quote-unquote, retooling just a year ago.
Right. And to jump on that, too, Ray, is – not Ray, Hayes, they haven't signed a 41-year-old. They haven't signed a 37-year-old. You know, like they – and I know you can continue to retool the bottom of your roster, but, you know, doesn't it say – and that's what I think you're talking about, Brian, is they've kind of – have reshaped their roster to win now. Like, now it's time, like, and you're going at it, and they feel like they've addressed one of their issues, and maybe that's intangibles or, you know, chemistry in the room, that type of stuff. So it's like, okay, like, we're allowing these young guys to grow, and we've seen that in the last couple of years, but now it's like put up or shut up, or we're going to have to change the dynamic. This team is not a young team anymore. They're going to be with the older guys. They're going to be one of the older teams in the league just from an average standpoint because of the 30-plus.
Brody's 30. Bogosian's 30. Like, they're, it's not just
Freddie's 30. 30. Tavares is 30.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. They're not a young team.
Yeah.
So you better be ready to do
that's
something.
That's where the urgency comes from, Brian, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what and that's just comparing the Leafs to you know, other teams around the country.
Right.
And anyway, we'll see. All right, buddy. We'll leave it there. World Juniors, they're, I guess, unveiling the sked tonight, Bobby Mack and Duffy. And
yeah, we were up, or I was up early taping my part of the show, and we got something to look forward to. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, and I do you think there'll be, like, more players available or more guys pulling back because they want to be available for camps in the NHL?
Well, I think if they're available, the teams would want them to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because the gold medal game is the 6th, I think, or the 5th, something like that. So I would think they would want them to play. The you know, one disadvantage Canada is going to have here is none of their players are playing. Right? Yeah. Like, a lot of the European teams, the guys are playing in the Swedish League, or the KHL's going and Finland's going, and you know, that's not the case for a lot of the North American players, of course.
Yeah,
so it'll
that's
be
major.
It's going to be really interesting once they get them to camp and try and get them in game shape when there isn't really a lot of games to be had.
Yep, we're only a couple of months away from that. That'll be good. All right, buddy, we'll leave it there. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5.
Talk to you then, guys. Have a good one.
There's Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days continue with rates from 0% and free winter tires with every in-stock new vehicle purchase in October. MapleToyota.com. Cody Bellinger went off last night. He's got some swag, and we didn't hear a ton of people chirping him for the bat flip and the strut down the first baseline. But we'll see what Phillips can tell us about that, and we'll tee up game one of the World Series tomorrow night. Steve Phillips, our MLB analyst, will join us next. All right, the World Series is set, and game one tomorrow night. There will be fans in the stands. There were fans in the stands for the NLCS, which, even though it wasn't a packed house, it's a rarity in 2020. We'll take it. And Dodger fans showing up. And, in fact, there were a lot of Packer fans down at the Buccaneers game yesterday because Tampa's allowing a certain amount of fans into the building. There were a lot of Packer fans down there. So sports fans around, you know, America, Canada, are itching to get into the building, or some of them are. And
right.
I'm assuming there will be a lot of Dodger fans. There aren't any Rays fans, so they're not going to show up anyway. But to tee up game one in the World Series, here's our MLB analyst, Steve Phillips. Two best teams in baseball. Is this the way it should be, Steve? Tampa taking on LA starting tomorrow night?
I think it should have been the Astros just for the heck of it. But I think that, yeah. that, you know, we're looking at the two teams that won 40-plus games, 43-17 for the Dodgers, 40-20 for the Rays. They're two evenly matched teams in a lot of ways. Although I guess the odds makers, the Dodgers are minus 200. It's pretty interesting how they're looking at a significant advantage for the Dodgers. I don't see it as that wide a gap at all between these two teams. I mean, you've got the Dodgers, one of the best offensive teams in baseball. They've got that circular lineup. There's no beginning and no end. They're all the same. They all can hit for average and for power. None of them strike out. They get on base. They walk. And they can make productive outs. So, it's a really good offense. And they've got good pitching, but you look at Tampa Bay and the Rays have really good pitching. And you're talking about a big three in the rotation with Snell, Glasnow, and Morton. They've got a great bullpen. And, by the way, remember off days in the World Series, which means that, it doesn't take a 28-man roster to win a seven-game series. It might take a, 15 or 16 of the 28-man roster to do it with the extra off days. Although the Rays, their bullpen arms are interchangeable, as they've shown all year. But I think it's a very, very closely matched series. And interesting, 11,000 fans or so in the stands at Globe Life Field, it will feel like a home game for the Tampa Bay Rays. They're going to be right at home. Although, the other part of it is the Dodgers have played there. Remember, the Dodgers have played there, so they've got an advantage. They know the field. Mookie Betts knows how high he needs to jump to rob home runs. We've seen Bellinger do it. And so they know some of the nooks and crannies of the stadium. That in some ways gives them a comfort level and maybe an advantage as well.
My assumption with Vegas would be that the Dodgers are a more public team, so more money is going to come in on them, so they adjust the odds for that. And I guess they look at the Rays and they wonder, will they be able to hit? Will you be able to generate enough offense? Because that has been a bit of an issue for them. I guess you're not that concerned. You think Tampa will be able to go, mano a mano when it comes to the bats, and the Dodgers can score runs in a variety of ways. They can play the long ball, they can play small ball. Do you believe in Tampa's offense in the World Series?
Well, yeah, here's what I believe about Tampa. You're right. I mean, their approach has been great pitching and good enough offense, where the Dodgers have had good pitching and really good offense. And so there's a narrower path for the Rays than there is the Dodgers. The Rays probably aren't going to win a slugfest if it turns into that. But because of their pitching, they tend to keep games away from turning into slugfest because, if it starts to get away, they just bring in another arm of somebody who can shut down good hitters. And so I think because of the fact that they have such pitching depth and that baseball axiom that good pitching can shut down good hitting, I think that we're going to see a lower scoring series. That the Dodgers aren't going to be able to put up an 11th spot in an inning. There's no way they will because Kevin Cash has got four different guys he can go to. His stable of guys who throw 98, that includes his starting pitcher, Tyler Glasnow, who could throw 100 miles per hour with his 100th pitch in the game. I think that I tend to think that the Dodgers have more ways to win, but I don't know if some of the ways the Dodgers can win will ever come into play in the series. So I think it's going to be a closer match where the pitching will keep it close and it comes down to getting big hits. I have the Dodgers winning it, but I think it's much closer than what the odds say. And to your point, I think you're right. I think they're trying to draw some people in on the Tampa Bay side. But from a betting perspective, the Tampa Bay bet's a pretty good bet right now.
Well, Steve, speaking of pitching, if you're Dave Roberts, what kind of leash do you give Clayton Kershaw in game one?
So, the one thing to remember, the National League is only having one day off before they play, where the American League's had a couple days off. Both went to Game 7, but because the American League ended Saturday, they're getting Sunday and Monday off, and so their bullpen's going to be fresher. So I think that leash issue for Kershaw has cost Kershaw. How many times has he given us a quality sixth inning, and then the seventh inning it blows up on him, and it looks like a bad start? And so I do think that although, what we want from guys is to pitch their best baseball when they're the most fatigued, they shouldn't be that fatigued this year, starters. And so I think that the sixth inning, seventh inning is where Dave Roberts or, Andrew Friedman or some kid in the analytics department is going to make their money about when to go to the bullpen. I suspect that they go quicker to the bullpen this year than they ever have before with Kershaw. That if he gives them six quality, he's out. He doesn't get the seventh, and they're going to go to somebody else. And I think it's the right move.
Oh, I think you have to. I mean, history has told you all you need to know about Kershaw. And he's got a 4.31 ERA. I think he's got over 177 innings pitched in the postseason. So it's not
right.
some small sample size. I mean, this is the real deal. This he has the most bloated ERA of any pitcher in baseball history that has over 100 innings pitched in the postseason. So it blows up on him. It's just a matter of time. And it has scarred his reputation, and it always will, unless he gets the redemption this week. And I'm rooting for him. Like, I'm not a Dodger fan. I have no connection to L.A., but I've always kind of appreciated his approach, Kershaw. And I obviously, his regular season performances are all-time. I mean, he's an all-time great regular season pitcher. But I think his reputation can be saved if he gets one ring. You know, if he finds a way to get a win, and he's probably going to rely on his teammates, clearly. He's not taking the ball every day. If he gets one, I think you go lean back towards, wow, that regular season. But if he loses this again and he chokes out again, I think when all is said and done, 10, 15 years down the road, when he's going into Cooperstown, you bring up the postseason first. I think you have to with Kershaw.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think, you know, we can't ignore the pink elephant in the room. I mean, he's got a 2.43 ERA in the regular season and a 4.31 ERA, you know, almost 1.9 runs per nine innings more in the postseason. He's a plus 99 in wins and losses, 175 and 76 in the regular season. He's 11 and 12 in the postseason. So it's clearly an issue. Now, it doesn't mean that he's always been bad. He has won a World Series game in 2017. I think it was game one that he pitched. He won. So he's not always been bad. I think the other thing that plays into it is the Bumgarner factor. You know, because he's a lefty, because he's a Giant, because, you know, it's a division rival, and because Bumgarner has been such a great postseason pitcher, you know, putting the team on his shoulders, we had that expectation for Kershaw. Well, you should be able to do it too. That means not only starting, but relieving as well. And none of that has really gone all that favorably for him. And it's almost to the point where he can throw five perfect innings, and if something goes wrong in the sixth, it'll be like, oh, here it is. Here's where we go again. And he's got to find a way to get through that, or you get him out before it happens. And I think that that's where they're going to have to manage him. And the other thing that's interesting is that the Dodgers statistically had a better bullpen than the Rays this year. Better ERA, you know, similar strikeout numbers, and so – you know, they've got a really good bullpen, too. With the off days, it'll be fun to see how the managers manage the starters pitching. And I think it's going to be more of an issue maybe for the Dodgers. You know, what does Urias do? Does he come in relief at all? Does he get a relief outing in game one, you know, after having pitched three innings on Sunday? You know, how do you go about doing that? So I think that there's going to be a lot of intriguing aspects of this series. It's not from a network perspective. The Rays don't draw big viewership, but it's going to be a really, really good series.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Game one of the World Series tomorrow night, Rays taking on the Dodgers. So Bellinger goes deep in the seventh last night, and he pimped that home run, and which I'm all for. I mean, we've had this conversation for years now, Steve, and it was just the 50-year anniversary of the Bautista bat flip. But Bautista took a ton of heat. Right. Earlier this year, Tatis Jr. took heat. Acuna takes heat. I didn't see much heat for Bellinger. And is that because he's American? Is it because he plays for the Dodgers? Is it because the game has changed that much over the course of like 2 weeks? Because I didn't see Goose Gossage doing the rounds snapping about Cody Bellinger today.
Yeah, Bellinger sort of stood and watched it until it landed and then started running. But I do think the game's changed a lot in the last 5 years. I think we've come to a level of acceptance that it's okay to let guys celebrate and show some personality and to not judge them for it. And so I do think there's a part of it. I always believe there's an element of prejudice that goes into the evaluation and judgments and criticisms of players and things that go on with that. I do. I believe it. I believe it's real. And I believe it's true. And maybe we're getting better about some of that because everybody's been celebrating. Now we got mad at Fernando Tatis Jr. though, because he was the one who swung at the 3-0 pitch when I'm looking at it going, who cares? I mean, you know, it wasn't, the game wasn't out of touch and everything else. So you know, in my mind, I think it's one that I think the game's changing. I think there's a level of acceptance more and more. I think that Bellinger's probably earned a certain level of, as an MVP, acceptance that maybe it's okay for an MVP to be able to do it instead of a young guy who's not quite earned it yet.
Well, Steve, sorry, I was going to say, it's funny, like, we talk about Bellinger, we talk about Kershaw. I was trying to think this morning, like, if there is a more, to the casual baseball fan, anonymous World Series team than the Rays. Like, who would be, like, Blake Snell people could probably name, but after that, it's like, can you think of, like, a World Series team that has less star power than Tampa?
I think Tampa back in 2008. I mean, yeah. it really, you know, the Padres back a few years maybe, but it really is Hollywood, you know, with the leading actors, yeah, of Betts and Kershaw and Bellinger against the supporting cast, right? The best supporting cast. If they're going to get Academy Awards, you've got the lead actor category in Los Angeles, and then you've got the supporting cast where they mix and match the pieces. Nobody's really an everyday player except now a Rosarena, who people are starting to recognize a little bit, but not really. And you know what, Brandon Lau, nobody's going to know that. Wait, his name's pronounced Lau? That's what they're going to say. Like, I didn't know, you know. And so, I think you're right. It is such a stark difference. And then you look at, okay, you've got one of the largest payrolls in baseball, one of the smallest payrolls in baseball. Oh, the guy running the Dodgers now used to run the Rays. You've got Moneyball with money in Los Angeles and Moneyball philosophy in Tampa Bay, looking for as many discount values as they can. There's a lot of interesting storylines for me. I mean, being a former GM and you know, doing baseball stuff, I love all the different storylines that really are, you know, it's David and Goliath in some ways. And if I'm the Rays, I'm using that to my benefit as motivation. But I think from a media perspective, you know, and a broadcast perspective, there's a lot of good sort of angles to play in broadcasting the series.
I think it's a worst-case scenario for the 28 other GMs in the league, because every fan base can point at either team and say, what the hell are you doing? Like, either spend the money like the Dodgers and get to the World Series, or even if you don't spend money, the Rays got there, so what's your problem? Like, it's a worst-case scenario for those 28 GMs.
Here's the other part, though. It's even for the large market guys, their owners are saying, oh, so tell me why these Rays guys are so much smarter than you, that they're paying a fraction of our payroll. Why are you not able to do this? I'm cutting your payroll next year. Find a better way to be more efficient. And from a player's perspective, it's not always great for the Rays to get in either, a small market team, because owners start to look at it and say, why am I spending all this money when these guys aren't? So let me get one of their guys in our front office. You guys better get it together, but let's start spending less. And that is never in the favor of the players.
No, it's not. That's a good point. And then you throw in the economy and COVID and all that. I mean, we'll get to the offseason in about a week and a half, but it's going to be one that's very different. I don't think there's any disputing that. Game one tomorrow night. Enjoy it, buddy. We'll do it again later in the week.
All right, terrific. Thanks for having me, guys.
Steve Phillips, our baseball analyst.
Brian, do you know what?
I don't know what's going to happen in the offseason.
I was going to ask you guys, the Kershaw thing, does it remind you at all of Peyton Manning before he won?
Yes, but yeah, Peyton had won by now. Like, Peyton won in 06, right? Like, he...
That was the Bears Super Bowl?
Yes. So, like, that was... He had been the man for about 5 or 6 years. Kershaw has been in the league for... How long has he been in the league for? This is his 12th year, 13th year? So... But similarities for sure in terms of watching him in the regular season, and you're like, that's the best player.
Yeah.
Like, that's the best pitcher. That's the best quarterback. And then just couldn't get over the hump.
I wonder if the advantage, like, disappears, that makes him special over a long season, disappears when it's so tight and you're so much – everyone is scouting you differently and more intensely and the competition's better.
Well, he's got to fight through, though. Like, that's – you know, like – he's got an opportunity. That's why I think this is good for him, because he can silence a lot of haters here by having a really good World Series. Hey, you said it before.
Absolutely. Like,
you have one good World Series. That's all the people will be remembering, not the failures in the playoffs. And that's not just reserved for Kershaw. That's any pro athlete. It's what have you done for me lately, not 10 years ago.
Yep, for sure. You get one. Like, Peyton's a good example. Once Peyton got one, and he ended up getting two, It's like, I don't really care that he ran into a wall against New England forever or whatever. It's guy won five MVPs and two Super Bowls. That's a pretty good career. He doesn't have to explain himself.
Yep.
And Kershaw, we're going to see start, I presume, at least two games. And if it goes seven, then you get into the what does Dave Roberts do? Does he bring him out of the bullpen, seventh inning, try to get three outs on short rest? Like, that's drama. And that's where Kershaw's run into trouble in the past. And we'll see if there's going to be another act. I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. There's a football game going on right now. Monday Nighter tonight. We'll tee the Monday Nighter up. Get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Looking at the football game tonight, Dallas at home against Arizona. I'm looking at the star positions. I think Kyler Murray goes off tonight under the lights in Dallas. And first overall pick, he's looking for respect. He wants his team to get love. I think he shows up tonight over the number, total passing yards, under the number for Andy Dalton, total pass completions. I think they're going to run the ball a lot, so I'll go over the number. Zeke, total rushing yards, and over the number, DeAndre Hopkins, total receptions, a four-pack of props. Throw down 20, you can score $135. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. ProLine, it's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, get your put your knowledge on the line. Sounds like the Bills and Chiefs are just, it's a slop fest down
13-10.
13-10. Just running the ball. Andy Reid, does he have his face shield on, and is it foggy or what?
Oh, for sure. You know it. Like, he knew he was a meme that first game, and how he's embraced it. Mm-hmm. I think he knows
what a meme is?
Nope.
Probably not.
He's like Belichick. So. What did Belichick call the, didn't he say the Twitter machine or something like that?
Yeah.
Like
the Twitter machine, the TikTok, Gram, all that good stuff.
He doesn't care.
No, he doesn't. So, yeah, the Bills battling it out, and big game tonight. Again, Dallas, their first game officially without Dak Prescott. And their division is still just as bad as it was the last time they played. The Giants barely beat Washington because Washington went for two.
Yeah.
Thankfully, so we didn't have to watch overtime. I actually appreciate that from Ron Rivera. He didn't want to see any more action either. He said, we're either going to win this or lose this now. We're not playing more time.
Yeah, that was a disaster.
Disaster. And Philly lost to Baltimore, so nothing's changed in the division. Andy Dalton's got a shot here to go on a bit of a run. All right, Jonas.
All right, boys.
Thank you for doing this, buddy. When will we see you again?
Wednesday.
Okay.
Nice.
All right. There he is, Jonas.
McKay of Arbitration Day. Exciting.
Oh, do you think we'll have an answer by the time we get on the air?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think they settle. They might settle.
They could.
They might.
Most do.
Better.
Yeah.
All right, Jonas Seager from The Athletic. Great stuff as always. Dave Pullen on the show tomorrow. Noodles, you and I, we are back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
At Scarborough Nissan, the health and safety of the community and their employees is a top priority. With extra safety measures in place, Scarborough Nissan welcomes you to experience the Rediscover the Road sales event on now, where you can finance a 2020 Nissan Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or receive an up to $5,000 cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, driving satisfaction on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden Avenue. Visit ScarboroughNissan.com.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.